Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
More Rav Aurora and more very scintillating race talk. We'll break down the whole Breonna grand jury testimony. It's Breonna Taylor, that is. Very interesting stuff, so stay tuned for that. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Even the basic information out there, like names, email addresses, phone numbers, all have a value on the black market. Cyber criminals use it to gain access to more sensitive information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info at risk on the internet. You could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they'll send you an alert. If you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help restore your identity easier than you could on your own. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
Knowing to prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Real men are an endangered species. Shouted down and hunted. But Adam knows you're out there, alone in a sea of cowards. That's why he built a place for you rare breeds to come together. That's why he created Renaissance Man. At RenManUSA.com, you'll find your one-stop shop for all the products that Adam and real men like yourselves actually want. Things for the outdoorsman, the drinker, the driver, and yes, the lover. Renaissance Man is where Corolla fans go to find carefully curated gifts, vacation packages, and articles on things that are actually interesting, not blogs about which statues should go next. It's a calling card. A place for those who understand that the noblest pleasure in life is living it well. Head to RenManUSA.com for yourself or the man in your life. And get ready, because this Christmas, Adam Carolla brings you Renaissance Man.
All right, back with Rav Aurora, from a young 19-year-old from Indian descent. And normally don't get into everyone's race, but in this particular discussion, I feel like it's worth knowing. In Canada right now, right, Rav?
Yeah, I'm based in a town a couple hours away from Vancouver in Canada.
And the article, The Fallacy of White Privilege and How It's Corroding Our Society, was in the New York Post a while back, got a lot of traction, and Chris got him on the phone today. So this Breonna Taylor, is that from the Wall Street Journal, or where's that
from? It's from Newsweek.
Newsweek. Oh, sorry.
The headline is, What America Learned and Didn't Learn from the Breonna Taylor Grand Jury Testimony. Byline is Lee Habib. An innocent life was lost. Two cops were cleared of charges. And in the end, people retreated to their camps, left, right, black, brown, white, and blue, and stuck to their narratives. But there was something about this story that kept tugging at me. Why did Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, shoot at the cops that night? And why was there so little fanfare when attempted murder charges against him were dismissed back in May? Why was he cleared so quickly? What really happened that night in Louisville, Kentucky? I decided to listen to Walker's grand jury testimony to find out. It was late at night on March 13th, and Walker and Taylor were sleeping. Then came the late night banging on the door. Loud, ominous banging that scared them both. Walker, who'd known Taylor for over 7 years and had been dating her since 2016, testified that he thought it was an intruder at the door, but not any intruder. He thought it was Jamarcus Glover, Taylor's ex-boyfriend, whom she had begun dating not long after she began dating Walker.
All right, pause for a second. So we've been talking no-knock, no-knock warrant, no-knock warrant, no-knock warrant. Well, the cops were knocking. And I don't know if they identified themselves, but they certainly were banging on the door. I don't know if they're attempting to break it down. That seemed like a pretty crappy apartment, and it seemed like if those cops wanted to bust that door down, they could have done it in a
banging
timely fashion.
Banging on the door implies they were knocking loudly, right?
And also, with him and Breonna at some point standing in the hall with a gun, it would have, from the bed, it would imply that there was some knocking or banging or something on that door for some period of time, right? If you think about you and your wife laying in bed asleep.
It would take a second to get
out. It'd take a little while for both of you to get up, get out. Yeah. You know, you got to rub one out.
Yeah.
And then get your gun and then stand in the hall. So
it would be really, really strange, though, if there were about six cops at the door and they just knock. They just keep on hitting the door and never say, police.
That's what I was thinking.
There is other grand jury testimony from a neighbor that says they announce themselves.
Jeez, when'd you turn into Ted Nugent? So, A, they probably knocked, or they knocked, and B, they probably identified themselves. Doesn't mean they heard it, but this whole sort of no-knock, bust-in, guns-a-blazing thing, you know, shot. Well, remember the first story was shot her in her sleep. She was in her sleep. She was in her bed. She was in her bed sleeping, and the cop shot her. Okay, not in her bed. Now, did the person who said that think she was in her bed? I don't think so. Her attorney said that. It's not, they have coroners. They have investigators. If someone's shot in their bed, it's different than being shot in the entry hall. So he's lying, and we're buying.
Well done.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, so we thought it was Jamarcus Glover. Glover had a lengthy criminal record dating back to 2008 in his home state of Mississippi, where he served 6 years of a 17-year sentence for a drug felony. After his release, he moved to Kentucky, where he was convicted of another drug offense in 2014. More brushes with the law followed. In December 2016, Taylor rented a car for Glover and lent it to him. Not long after, a man was found dead in that car. He was executed gang-style.
The thing that's funny about this is I told that to Mark Garagos. This is all Mark Garagos does is these kind of cases. He's like, she rented a car and then the boyfriend executed a guy in the trunk of the car? I didn't hear about that. And I'm like, well, if you didn't hear about it, Mark, it's not being talked about.
But you know who did hear about it? AJ Benza, because he was the first one I remember talking about that.
Yeah, now it's fucking up the narrative that the media is pushing out there and politicians as well. But if you rented a car and it was in your name and it was for this guy and someone is found executed in the trunk, you might make a list of people the cops were interested in versus rando person sleeping. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It fucks up the narrative of her being on this warrant or her place being on this warrant. But yeah, I think if someone was executed in a rental car and your name was on the agreement, the cops might put you on a list. All right, sorry.
All right, the following is all quoted, which makes me believe it's probably from a police report. Inside the car, there were three baggies of drugs and Miss Taylor's rental contract. The victim was the brother of an associate of Mr. Glover, who had been arrested alongside the drug dealer numerous times. Investigators didn't believe Taylor had knowledge of that crime, but they wondered whether she was involved in Mr. Glover's drug operation. That's also quoted, that they wondered whether she was involved in the drug operation.
This is a Times report, not the police report, just to clarity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. In the years to come, Taylor would have come up with bail money, at least $7,500 for Glover and a friend on two occasions. That's why the cops were at Taylor's home that night, not because they thought she was a dealer or a bad girl. She was neither. But because she had been dating a bad guy, and that bad guy spent time with her and listed her apartment as his home address with Chase Bank, where he had an account. Five no-knock warrants were signed by a judge that afternoon seeking evidence of drug trafficking by Glover and people affiliated and associated with him. The night of the shooting, Walker admitted he fired the first shot. So, boom, one shot, he testified. Then all of a sudden, there's a whole lot of shots, he continued. I just hear her screaming. That's why Walker wasn't charged. Because he was a good guy and a licensed owner of a 9mm Glock. And he thought the person trying to break into his girlfriend's apartment was a bad guy with a bad history. A bad guy his girlfriend was trying her best to leave. That's why Walker fired that first shot to defend himself and his girl.
Can I say this, and Rob, curious what your take is. Sometimes shit is just horrible timing, bad coincidence, and a whole it's a whole bunch of bad things just converging at once. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We try to turn it into bad cop shooting or racist cop or whatever it is. This story is just a tragedy. It's really just a tragedy with a whole bunch of shit that like almost like it's almost like sometimes when they investigate a commercial airline crash, you'll realize it was just a bunch of little shit that added up and turned into a tragedy. But it wasn't. We're looking to blame the cops on this one. This is just a flat out mistake, tragedy. And when the cops came through the door, the new boyfriend thought it was the old boyfriend. When the cops were coming through the door, they just thought they were being fired upon, probably by the drug dealer, old boyfriend. It was all
who they were there originally to investigate or to look for.
Right. She was probably just fucking caught up with the bad boy. He manipulated her and said, I need to use your address or I need you to sign for this rental car. It's just a whole fucking confluence of shitty events that led to this crazy tragedy. How is it that the cops return fire, miss altogether the guy who shot the cop, the boyfriend, and hit Breonna Taylor as many times as they did? I mean, it's the worst. Yeah. It sounds. I'm not a luck guy, but this is just a tragedy with the worst luck ever. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's why Walker fired that first shot to defend himself and his girl, and that's why he was cleared of the attempted murder charge. Because under Kentucky's Stand Your Ground statute, citizens have the right to use deadly force against an intruder. He told investigators that if he'd known it was the police at the door, he would never have fired that shot, and that he and Taylor had no reason to fear the cops. The testimonies of Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly and Detective Miles Cosgrove of the Louisville Metro Police Department were equally compelling. The two officers said they knocked at the door repeatedly and identified themselves. Mattingly testified that he saw silhouettes of a male and a female figure near the end of the hallway, the man holding what appeared to be a gun in his hand, his arm stretched out in firing position. Then came the first shot, which was fired by Taylor's boyfriend. As soon as the shot hit, I could feel the heat in my leg, Mattingly testified, and so I just returned fire. He recalled firing at least four rounds. Cosgrove, who was behind him, also returned fire. And that's why the two Louisville cops who shot Taylor were cleared, because, like Walker, they too thought they were shooting a bad guy who shot at them first. A young woman's life was cut short, and the lives of all who loved her were permanently changed. But the cops' lives were permanently changed, too. They must live with the fact that they shot and killed Taylor, and will forever live with the accusation that they were racist murderers. There were no winners in this story, and no criminals, except the drug-dealing ex-boyfriend.
Well, there you go.
Who was nowhere to be found.
All right, but...
yeah, the luckiest one in the whole bunch.
That's what happened. But that ain't the message society got, and that ain't the message we've been putting out there at all. Just fucking, just a shit show. Just a bad bunch of events that all just came together at once, and that's all. And I don't know why that's another shining example of how racist our country is, but we sure the fuck turned it into one, didn't we? All right.
Became a cost celeb.
I know. It's on every LeBron James is the fucking tennis shoes. It's a weird thing. Also, like, you know, nobody deserves to die. She was young. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. But it doesn't have to become a cause celeb. It's just a bizarre fucking random tragedy that happened to involve cops and her boyfriend. Rob, thoughts?
Yeah, it's an extremely convoluted case, with so many details, so many nuances. But you have to understand that the perspective that this is being viewed from is that America is a systemically racist society, that there is an epidemic of lethal police violence against Black Americans. And so this just fits the trend. You have to understand it from that perspective. That's the perspective that people see because of the media, because of politicians, because of pop culture figures like Demi Lovato and LeBron James recently, like talking about how black men are being hunted down in America. And so all those factors go into perceiving this individual case, and it becomes just part of this system of racism and white supremacy. And so this is just another black body killed by the state because of white supremacy, because of a system embedded with racism. As Colin Kaepernick recently had an essay series that he did, and in his opening essay I was reading it, and he was talking about how we should abolish police, abolish prisons because of these incidents like Breonna Taylor, like George Floyd, but it just completely misses the mark of these cases.
Well, it's a perfect stew because in order to do this, what we're being gaslit is a nation. We're being gaslit into being convinced that we're a racist nation, and we're not. But it takes a perfect storm because you can't do it alone. It takes the news, and the news outlet, they're the kind of the spark. They get it going. You know, the news gets it going, or social media, where communication, that's kind of the spark. Then you have the politicians, and the politicians then sort of codify it. They sort of make it real. Like, now I got a bill to stop this. Yeah. So it's like,
now it's a platform.
If you're coming up with legislation to stop something, it must exist. You know what I'm saying? So then you have the politicians who are sparked by this, but there's a third ingredient, and it's a super important ingredient. You must have shitloads of cowards. Oh, by the way, there's another ingredient. The other ingredient is pop culture. That's LeBron James. That's Demi Lovato. That's all the celebrities. So you get the celebrities, you got the news, yep. You got the politicians, and then you have a large group of people. And those are people who have no idea what the fuck is going on. But that group is saying, join us. Come join us. And more people join them. Now, do you want to be the person standing alone over there? No. You have to be a fucking coward, and you have to join this group. Once you join that group, now we got the news, we got pop culture, celebrities, we have politicians, and just a larger and larger group of Americans who are joining it. Well, now we have a movement. Now we have something. Now this is it. And that's where we're living. And anyone who pushes against that narrative gets called a racist. So, of course, you go join that group. You don't, no one wants to be called a racist. And here we are today. Yes, Ryan.
You don't even have to be, you don't have to be, I'm sorry, I forget what you said, but like, you know, questioning or whatever. You could just be outside the movement, outside the group, arms crossed. Like, I think there's more. I'd like to hear all the details before I weigh in or join your group or any group. And the implication is that you're a racist if you just want more information or you want to hear the whole story or whatever it is.
My 14-year-old daughter believes this is a racist nation, believes that, you know, cops are shooting. She's been brought up in it. She's been brining in this shit and just thinks that's who we are. Like, that's her belief. That's, she argues with my son all the time who doesn't believe that. But I mean, that's her belief. That's what she knows. I mean, she doesn't have a driver's license yet, but she knows this is a racist nation. Last word, yeah. Rav.
Pardon?
Last, I'll give you the last word.
Oh, the last word. Oh, okay. Yeah. With young people, this is especially concentrated. According to polls, a whole third of young Americans aged 18 to 34 want to abolish the police. And this is all starting from social media, and cases like George Floyd become gateways into kind of social justice ideology. And so what started as real righteous protests against police brutality turn into hashtag abolish capitalism. They turn into white privilege, systemic oppression, racial oppression, microaggressions, white fragility. All these things then become part of the deal. And these young kids being brought up in Instagram and looking at these posts, and they're learning this new language. They're becoming exposed to political activism, and they want to identify with it, and their friends are doing it as well. And so there's this huge social phenomenon that's taking place here, and it's creating this new generation of of young Americans, young Canadians that are viewing the society as systemically racist, and they want to defund the police or abolish the police. And it's incredibly toxic, and it's making our conversation really radical and not focused on the actual issues, which we're not talking about at all.
Well, of course, and again, all those roads just lead down to people being fucking cowards. At some point, people are going to have to fucking speak up, and if someone calls you racist, so be it. You will get the fuck on with your life. God knows I do. Hey, Rob, thank you so much for joining us. Rob Aurora.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Let me give your website out. RAVARORA.com is the website, and check up on his very interesting articles. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, let me hit Liquid IV, and then we'll roll into some news. No police shootings, please, Gina. All right, Liquid IV. I love this stuff. You want to feel good? You want to work up a little lather, get a sweat going, exercise, diets, vitamins, good. Flu season's around the corner as winter approaches. It's more important than ever to have a strong immune system. That's why I use Liquid IV, and they created a hydration multiplier and immune support as well. These days, come on, more than ever, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, all the great stuff. Wellmune, a naturally sourced beta-glucan, provides help and strength, helps to strengthen your immune system. I take this stuff on the road every time I go somewhere, every time I go for a long hike or a long walk, put it in your water bottle, shake it up, it tastes great. And with every purchase, Liquid IV is going to donate a serving. They'll donate response to first responders, hospital workers, fire responders, people really sweating underneath that plastic. So Liquid IV, right, Dawson?
Liquid IV's new hydration multiplier plus immune support is available at Walmart, or order online and get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Adam at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code Adam at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code Adam.
All right, quick break. Back with the news, Bald and Gina, right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, there is so much discussion about voting and how you're voting and if you're going to go stand in line and if your company offers paid time off to do it and if you're a ballot guy, if you're a ballot box guy or a mail-in gal or whatever. But thank God for Los Angeles. And I would imagine that this is possibly happening in other states, but we certainly don't expect it in ours. Enter the Compton Cowboys. I don't know if you saw this on the news recently, but they made a spectacle on Sunday.
The worst USFL team ever.
Yeah.
And we have a picture dropping off their mail-in ballots all on horseback. This is a group known as the Compton Cowboys. They're 10 friends who hail from L.A. They aim to uplift inner city communities through horseback riding while highlighting the rich legacy of African Americans in equine and Western heritage, according to the website. They say everybody lights up when they see the Compton Cowboys riding through town. You get that special thing about a horse. It's no matter who you are. You could be a kid. You could be an older person. You could be a gangster. You could be a white collar person. Whatever you're doing, you're going to see a horse. You're going to light up. So they are making the most of dropping off their ballots going through the inner city.
Yeah, horses. I really do believe that it sounds kind of corny, but a lot of these like inner city kids and situations, if they could get out and get into nature a little bit, ride a horse, pet a horse, take a hike, like just getting with nature. We are not, I don't believe our systems are wired to live around too much concrete and asphalt. Mm-hmm. Like we can do it for a period of time, but it can't be your life. You have to get, you have to put your feet in the ocean. You have to pet a horse's nose. You know, you have to smell a pine cone or something. There's no doubt that all the people who do the most of that are the most balanced, like chemically balanced, like settled or something.
Well, you brought up the Nuge earlier, the Motor City Madman. He has a camp to teach kids how to hunt.
Yeah, I know. Dawson was a counselor there until this whole COVID thing kicked in. So, you know, in terms of like all that shit all the time where it's like, we got to build a nighttime basketball court and stuff like that, or a boxing gym or something, that's okay. But you got to get out of that environment. I mean, if you guys, when I was out in South Philly a few years ago and I was just kind of walking around my dad's old stomping grounds in South Philly, I started to feel sick just walking around that place, like just nothing but nothing but filth and graffiti. Cement. And it's just like, ugh. That's why they
have the Fresh Air Fund. I think that's out of New York. And the whole point of that is exactly what you're saying, to get inner city kids, hosted by families either in upstate or, you know, in the tri-state area, to just get them into nature, to just go see some trees for the summer.
Yeah.
And that's what that whole foundation is based on. I only lived in New York for 2 years, a little over 2 years. And there were days, because it was such a day in and day out sort of shock to me, that I was so claustrophobic, I was getting anxious. And I would go to Central Park, and I would only go to the part of the park where if you laid a certain way and you sat a certain way, you couldn't see fucking skyscrapers when you looked up.
Oh, really?
Because it was just, everything just felt like it was closing in on
you. There was an imprint of Gina on the ground.
I know. It was tough because I lived in Queens, I lived in Harlem, I lived in the East Village, and not coming from that environment, the walls do close in on you.
Yeah, so good for the Compton Cowboys.
That's right. So we've heard of debunking information. Well, Twitter is now going to pre-bunk. They said last week it would begin placing messages at the top of users' feeds to preemptively debunk false information about voting by mail and election results. That's an escalating sort of tech battle that they've been dealing with misinformation, they say. Twitter is calling the message a pre-bunk because the debunking is not a reaction to anything existing yet. One of the messages scheduled to go live is, and I'm quoting, election experts confirm that voting by mail is safe and secure, even with an increase in mail-in ballots.
I just sort of took off with all this mail-in. Is all the mail-in... The reason is COVID? I mean, I know people mail in anyway or absentee, but is the drive behind the mail in election cycle, is that all COVID based?
Yes, I think so. You mean the drive for people to do it, not for people to discredit it?
Yeah, to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I think that's the accelerant. I mean, they want, obviously, you know, it behooves everyone to expand access to voting, but the reason, the accelerant, so to speak, is like, COVID, don't stand in line. Don't go to these crowded places. Go ahead and mail in your ballot.
Well, and what crowded places?
Isn't it like we all can go to Trader Joe's, though? Does it feel that different?
They talked about that in one of the articles and said it's because grocery stores and things like that are very properly ventilated and spaced out. And so that's different than, you know, Newsom not wanting you to sit with your neighbors in your little living room.
Voting centers are mostly in high school gyms, though, right?
Well, that's right.
Fire stations. So,
but also think about about capacity ventilated issues, but it's also capacity issues. If you have 50 ballot booths and now you're only allowed to use 10 of them, people are going to be standing in line for 2 days.
Okay.
I would imagine.
It seems weird. It's bizarre to me because I've just been going about my life. Like I went to the Home Depot the other day and there was a line to get into the Home Depot. So it was full to whatever their capacity is. And I've been in there and there's plenty of people in that place. Yeah. And then there's the market and then there's the fucking corner store. Like this feels weird that it's so driven by COVID, but all right, everyone's a fucking pussy. Fine. I get it. All right.
Well, and then I think the argument against, you know, there being any conspiracy behind mailing stuff. I don't remember who's in charge of it. Louis, the guy who's in charge of the Postal Service. But he said, Louis DeJoy.
Oh, Louis something.
DeJoy, Louis something.
I think it was him who said, like, do you know that we get, you know, whatever it is, 3 billion Christmas cards to where they're supposed to go on time. We don't have 3 billion mail-in ballots to deal with. But then there's been funding cut issues. And, you know, so maybe Twitter will save us all with debunking and pre-bunking the problem. But, you know, mail it in, go stand in line, do what you got to do. So far, yeah. There's only been, I think, one, perhaps two ballot boxes that have been set on fire. So, yeah. So far, we're doing all right.
We're doing good.
Yeah.
Wendy Williams. Haven't talked about her in a while. Things were going all right.
What?
Yeah.
First off, how necessary is Wendy Williams?
Oh, we're about to find out.
To our audience, probably.
I just feel like I'm not sure what she does. I know she dishes, you know, the hot stuff.
The hot
goss. She tells it like it is.
She tells it like it is.
And she keeps it real.
But doesn't she
straight talk?
Doesn't she keep herself in the news by having a nervous breakdown every 19 months?
You're 100% right. I think there's a skill to people who just keep themselves, I guess, relevant or in the new or whatever, you know, whatever label and slap on it. That's a skill unto itself. Like, I don't know how talented Wendy Williams is, but we all know her and she's in the news quite frequently. So,
but having public meltdowns, I feel like that's her skill. I don't know. I don't even know what she's into now, but she seems to have very public breakdowns.
Yeah. I don't know if this one was premeditated, but in a certain way, but we'll find out together. Viewers of the Wendy Williams show last Friday were concerned about her well-being. She acted sort of erratic on her Hot Topic segment. Her words were disjointed. Sometimes she wasn't finishing sentences. She was mispronouncing stuff. Backstage there were whispers about her sobriety, which she's been very sort of open about, candid. Nearly 2 years ago, she entered a rehab around the time of her divorce. Yet a former employee said most of Wendy's staff is still afraid to confront her. There's a little bit extra, but this was a 13-minute clip that I chopped down to less than a minute. So here's just a smattering of what the show looked like last week.
Well, a guy like Rick Ross, since he's rich forever.
Oh, no.
To me, he's got a lot of mansions.
The staff is trying to keep the ball in the air.
Okay. The mansion that he owns right there. Mm-hmm. We've already talked about this. Mm-hmm. 109 rooms.
109.
Joe Biden's like, I don't see the problem.
Yeah, I'd vote for her.
What's
the norm? It was Richard Roundtree. And what was Richard Roundtree doing? He didn't get me the part. So when I get it, they said, somebody about Richard Roundtree doing Chef. What?
Is that Isaac Hayes?
No, that was fucking Mike Pence.
No, I've got too many black people in my head now.
It was Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, it was one of my best interviews.
Wow.
Sorry. Yeah.
You didn't have to do much.
Would you let, I mean, have you seen enough or would you like to
see
the rest
more.
Of the clip?
I'll
Here we go.
12 bathrooms. We already talked about the bathrooms. Okay. Oh, 12 bedrooms.
Something's going on with her. All right. Here, I've seen enough.
And a nice look.
Whatever it is, let's handle it discreetly. Let's be discreet about it.
How do we? Well, my question to you is going to be, how do you do that when she's going live no matter what? But I actually have the answer to that. And if another taping goes like that, the producers said they have an evergreen ready to run if she's having some sort of issue, because they did not have anything to run. And that's what ended up airing. And it's not funny, obviously, when someone's struggling with something. The thing that gave me some chuckles was that, you know, the only people that seem to be allowed in the studio audience are the crew, and who knows what they're used to, and who knows how they, I mean, they were on point, they're clapping, they're laughing, they're trying to keep this ball in the air. And to be able to do that at the ready makes me think they've seen this multiple times, because there was no like anyone looking at each other and shrugging.
What's going on?
On it.
Well, also, by the way, keeping her audience at home is cruel because they are all fucking at home, like waiting for the Meals on Wheels van to come by. Like that audience, her audience, that daytime audience, they ain't jet skiing on the Riviera, and they ain't jogging in the park, and they ain't working on an app. They are home. That group is home.
Found.
I've been in that. I've done that show. That audience is, they tape, I think they taped at like 10:30, you know, like weekdays at like 10:30. If you're going to a Wendy Williams live taping, you are fucking unemployable. Because they're, it's not like you have a nighttime job. You're fucking there. Ugh. Then she made fun of me for my shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of things.
Okay. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grant.
All right. Well, you know, I think you have more in common with Matthew McConaughey than you may have been led to believe, Adam. He was opening up about raising his kids on and promoting his book Green Lights. He was doing that with Dax Shepard on his podcast, and they discussed the similarities in their upbringings as children of divorce. They did not have wealthy parents, households with physical violence. This led Shepard to ask McConaughey about the way he raises his three kids, 12 years old, 10 and 7. And McConaughey said that while he doesn't want to give the kids everything, he also doesn't want them to downplay or be embarrassed about what they do have because he's worked hard for it. He says, quote, "We want our children to own the affluence we have. Don't do any false modesty like, no, my mom and dad aren't. Yes, we are. Keep your chin high. When someone says, I bet you live in a big house, don't get shy. Don't feel guilty about that. We own it."
Yeah. Well,
as opposed to, Rick Dees that claims he's never flown first class or won't talk about it on when he's doing the radio show.
Oh God, wow. Such an old school radio thing.
You know how many Dees grease it gets in coach? Man, it gets hot back there.
Oh,
man. And they ain't serving up the Heine wine anymore. I'll tell you that. I just dug out two Rick Dees bits from the
80s. Wow. That was great.
You go Disco Duck.
About the time it took him to develop them.
Heine wine. I still don't really get Heine wine.
I have no idea what that is.
He doesn't either.
If you type in Rick Dees and Heine wine, will we hear a Heine wine bit? And again, I don't.
Is that anti-Semitic?
No,
not Heine.
Heine wine. I like I've said. When you are confusing, that is the worst thing you can say about a comedic premise or a joke. You can say it's not that funny or not funny at all. But if you just go, I don't know what they're trying to do, that is your worst day as a creator, right? When people don't know what you're doing. I never figured out the Heine wine bit.
So the Heine wine was actually the brainchild of a radio DJ, Terry Dorsey, who in 81 was a morning guy in Dallas, and he made these hits, and they proved to be such a hit and fooled enough listeners that Dorsey and the general manager of the station sold the scripts to radio stations around the country, including Rick.
Oh, it wasn't even his horrible idea.
Oh, yeah.
It was a prep service.
Do you have a recording of a Heine wine?
Let me see if I can find something.
So, yes, you know, it's pretty, first things first. We have, as a society, we completely jumped the shark. When I was a kid, people were pretending to be affluent. That was all the sitcom stuff is, oh, don't let them know your Dolly Parton blazer of many comforters. Whatever the shit that was. An AIDS quilt made from heaven.
Sure.
What the whole thing was about, you're going to make your own prom dress out of a curtain, you know, pretty in pink and all that shit. Everyone was trying to sort of elevate or up their game. Now, everyone is downgrading, and they're both bullshit. They're kind of equally bullshit. As a matter of fact, trying to pretend like you're more affluent, I kind of understand it. It's aspirational, and you're trying to get somewhere. Now no one wants to be judged, so they're rounding it down. Everyone just start owning it and go, yeah, I work really hard. My kids got a lot of shit too, but I explain to them all the time. That's because I work really hard, not because anything you guys did. And good for him. Heine wine bit, Maxipata.
I found one that is. It's not Rick Dees reading it, but
Chris, I'll buy you some time. pulling all these stories together, Rick Dees' son, obviously he's very wealthy.
Kevin.
Rick Dees, is that who it is? Mm-hmm. I only knew him as Rick Dees' son because he was at USC at the same time as me. He was in a competing fraternity. Pike. Ugh.
Yeah.
And he was, they had an unsanctioned rush event on what I believe, what I was told was Rick Dees' boat. Like they took a bunch of, you know, freshmen out there, got them drunk or whatever. And they got caught and they got fucked. They had to, like, you know, they couldn't have pledges for like a year. Like it was pretty bad.
That is
it was so delightful.
That is a white privilege story to button.
Yeah.
Button all our white privilege talk. All right, I'll hit Geico here. You want to save a bunch of money on your auto insurance? Might I suggest Geico? You go to geico.com, find out just how much you could be saving by going to geico.com. Switch to Geico, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance, and they'll do vans and RVs and Rick Dees' boat, man. So just go to geico.com and see just how much you could be saving. All right, is there a Heine Wine bit?
Yeah, this one's not Rick Dees. This is
That doesn't matter.
Okay,
we'll
yeah.
play it.
Here we go.
The Beatles' Lady Madonna and the Hollies' Bus Stop Wet Day. Well, you know the rest of the story. It's 7-11, 11 minutes after 7 o'clock at Wacky Radio with Moody in the Morning, and it's Monday, August 6th. This begins National Smile Week, and you're asked to share a smile with others and pass along a gift that costs you absolutely nothing. Big Red and Thor Heine, the owners and operators of the Heine Winery in beautiful downtown Waddy, Kentucky, Little L.A., two guys who are responsible for making Heine wine, the wine in the flip-top can, are giving all the Heine lovers across Kentucky and a big smile this week with the help of their Heinies. That's right, when you pick up a six-pack of Heine wine this week only, you'll notice something different about your can. Each can of Heine wine has a little smiley face painted right on it. In honor of National Smile Week, Big Red and Thor have painted faces on all their Heinies. As Big Red said, it only seems appropriate since more often than not, I'm told if anything can make you smile, it's got to be a little Heine. So, when you meander into your favorite carryout this week, ask the person behind the counter if he or she has a Heine with a smiley face painted on it. Take part in National Smile Week, and the best way to do that is by putting a smile on your face and letting Big Red and Thor put a smile on your Heine. Heine wine, the wine never once mentioned at the 1984 Summer Olympics, the wine that made Waddy pay Tona. 12 minutes after 7.
That bit is so that bit is so bad that if you were listening to it while looking for an address while you're driving, you just have no. It's all predicated on your butt being called your Heine.
Yeah.
And then the can. Nice throwing.
And the can. Oh. Jeez, it's fucking.
It took me a full 45 seconds to realize the joke was about butts. Or that there was the, you know, joke, quote unquote.
All right, simpler time. Should we take it home, Gina Grad?
That's what we will do. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
All right. Well, we were going to have the president on the show, but instead we called an audible and ended up with a pretty poignant conversation. So good
Very
for
compelling.
Us and good for you. Thank you guys for tuning in. West Palm Beach coming up, Improv November 20th and 21st. Two live shows early, two stand-up shows late, and then a live Reasonable Doubt as well. And you can subscribe to our YouTube page. We've got a lot of stand-up on there. It's all free, youtube.com/Adam Carolla. Tons of stuff up there as well. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla. For Gina Grad, Bob Ryan, and Rob Aurora, say it. Mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. The link's at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.